Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Well, thanks, Andrew. We have a heat wave here in LA, so my aircon is blasting full power, but otherwise doing fine.
I we somehow we should do like a house swap. Global times of year.
Thanks,
Yes.
but no thanks. I love London, but
Good
I like
answer.
California, even Southern California, even more.
Good answer. Okay, let's dive right in. And obviously, the sexiest topic of the day is payrolls, but also we still have a few Fed speakers today too. But as we always like to do, let's kind of recap just in general what were the key things over the past week.
Oh, the main action was a payroll, and it was a bit ambiguous because there was a big revision, downward revision to last month, also a big negative surprise. But the thing about headline NFP, it just tells you about demand, right? What you want to look at is a balance between demand and supply. And here's the two key indicators are unemployment, and unemployment was down 20 basis points, and wage growth. And wage growth was actually up relative to expectation, 0.4 instead of 0.3, against 0.2 last month. So it's a bit hard to tell for sure because we don't have data, but time-wise, it kind of works with the closing of the Mexican border since June. I mean, the administration has decided to tighten illegal entry into the US. And if you look at the Department of Homeland Security data on what is called border encounters, which is basically the borders, the number of times the border patrol intercepted illegal migrants, it's down since then, since June, sharply, which is kind of consistent with a decline in the number of available workers. A tightening of the labor market. So, to me, on balance, this, despite the headline numbers, this print shows a bit of a recovery in the labor market relative to July. So, if we had seen a bit of a weakening, I would have said this is good enough, this is strong enough to make the Fed do 50 in this month, 50 basis point cut, but I'm not seeing that in the data so far.
Okay, so in general, you feel like demand is kind of stabilized, but supply is slowing because there's just a lot less undocumented workers. So for people who do want to hire, they may have to pay slightly higher, and that's why that number went up. And then generally the numbers, there still may be a point of finding good people or finding people relevant for those roles. And that's why, in general, the nominal number of new jobs created was a little bit low. And both of those things kind of fit into the slowdown in immigration. And that does kind of, that makes a lot of sense to me, I have to say. I guess my only
I would
question is,
just I would add just one thing, Andrew. It's interesting that the month when immigration looks like it's down, wage growth is up. And it's kind of consistent, when Trump shut down immigration and started to enforce tighter immigration. That's when we saw an acceleration in wages. So, I mean, it's correlation,
It does
obviously,
make
when
some
you saw
sense.
data points, but to me, it's significant.
I guess my only question I was going to say on that is, would it show up that quickly?
Kind of. I mean, people get apprehended, they claim asylum, and I mean, look, don't get me wrong, it's a bit of an arbitrary
Maybe 3 months.
process, but you know, we've seen the CBO raise its estimates of immigration to 3.3 million last year, and before the pandemic, they thought it would be about half to three quarter of a million people a year. So people get apprehended, they claim asylum, they get a date to appear in court, which is several years down the road because there is a backlog of 3 million. And so they are left, you know, to enter the US and they try to find jobs. This seems to me, I mean, this is a story which you found in the media, which again, it has been picked up by the CBO. That's a basis for revising their estimates of immigration. So that seems, you know, fairly plausible to me.
Okay, cool. Okay, anything else? Yeah, kind of seemed. I mean, listen, if the market collapses, my kind of growing theory is even if the economy seems okay, you have a lot of cuts priced in the US, certainly compared even surprisingly to me. To the UK and Europe. Now, obviously, I know Europe is starting at a lower level. I still think the big risk is unless we see strong numbers and these cuts really get priced out, say specifically for next year with debate this year, we're going to see dollar yen lower. And if we see dollar yen lower, I still feel like that negative feedback loop seems relevant in the markets. And we see dollar yen through 140. I think equity markets are going down in the US, and that's going to feed on itself. And then the question is, does the Fed also see, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the S&P's up 15%, like it could come off 10%, still up 5% for the year. Should they cut? But generally, the economy is probably more fragile than it's been in the last 2 years. I think most of us would agree. So I still don't understand why these cuts, there's so many cuts priced in, but I do think that the result of that is probably going to force dollar yen lower, and that really is going to be a negative feedback loop for equity markets in general and feed on itself. But so what we saw some speakers, including Waller, speaking today. Is
Yeah,
that
so
how
we.
important is that? After the numbers you saw today.
So Waller, so first of all, Waller has gained a lot of credibility within the FOMC because, you know, he had predicted that there would be a soft landing. There was this big policy discussion with Summers and Blanchard, who were arguing for hard landing. And so far, it looks like Waller has won the argument. And Waller's view was that we could have a soft landing because the strong demand for labor could be absorbed through a decrease in the number of vacancies, which were exceptionally high. And therefore, you wouldn't need higher unemployment to stabilize inflation. And so far, the data seems to
Heard
agree
about
with
that.
him. And he's worried that, you know, he's looking at this thing called the Beveridge curve, which is the relationship between vacancies and unemployment. And the Beveridge curve, Waller's argument was basically that we were in the steep part of the curve, and that's why we could have a big decrease in vacancies without an increase in unemployment, but that we are moving towards the flattish part
Why?
of the.
Just because people are pulling jobs, they're just saying, oh, we don't need all those roles anymore. Or what would be the factor driving that?
That we are moving, you mean the shape of the Beveridge curve or the fact that
What why I kind of get that the What would be the big driver of a big drop in vacancies then?
Oh, it was just the fact that we had enormous dislocation during the pandemic, and also people didn't want to work. Either they were constrained by states, declaring lockdown, or they were worried about getting
Catching
sick.
COVID or something.
So we had a pull down of supply and a big reallocation of labor across different sectors of the economy. But that is behind us. And so, in fact, in the last time Waller spoke about the Beveridge curve, he was worried about the fact that you were getting to the part of the curve that is very flat. So where you have a small decline in vacancies, that gives rise to a big decline in unemployment. I'm not seeing this in the data, in the sense that the last jolt we got a small decline in vacancies, but today we also got a small decline, not a big increase in unemployment. But there is a reasonable case to be made that we are getting close to a flattish part of the Beveridge curve, and so the Fed should be careful. That said, is there enough in this argument to make Waller or the whole FOMC going for a 50 basis point cut this month rather than 25? I'm not sure. I don't think so. But Waller is speaking, and we'll get a better sense.
So if you to understand like this, what he's looking at, the data that's come out certainly this week would probably make him think this readjustment and this what happened over the last 2 or 3 years, this dislocation we're saying, coming back into balance and unemployment not having to explode higher when vacancies are coming down. That theory seems like it's kind of playing out. So why would he even think of a 50 cut? Or is it like, hey, let's get a 50 because it's still in this precarious relationship, which if the economy doesn't balance, like it's a kind of a fragile point in the economy in this readjustment.
I would look at the 50 in the context of how much they want to do this year. So
Right.
in June, they had one cut. This was down from two cuts in March. I think this time around they're likely to show in the SEP two, perhaps three cuts for this year. I'm still, ambivalent between those two, but basically, the Fed, it's like a super tanker. It moves very slowly. So what they do, they look at their last SEP and they ask themselves, what has changed? What has changed?
Right.
Inflation, okay. As it's where they want it to be, likely to stay there until the end of the year. But what's changed is that they had Q4 average unemployment at 4%, and they are at 4 point, right now we are at 4.2%. So I think that's enough to
Fine. That makes sense.
definitely add another. And the reason for front loading would be it's a little bit like inoculation. You think that there is a risk someone is not sick, but say in California, we have a resurgence in COVID-19. So you're not sick, but you want to lower the chances of getting sick so you get your vaccine. So the idea of the 50 basis points would be to give the economy more resiliency against possible future shocks, negative shocks. I don't see it in today's NFP. But again, I mean, I'm not the one decided. Let's see what Waller will say. Certainly, the speech we had from Williams this morning didn't suggest 50. I mean, you are still, because you see the risk if the Fed shows too many cuts this year and their Swiftie is that it will show implicitly, it could be seen as an admission that they're over-tightened or waited too long to ease. So that's another thing they are going to guard
Right,
against.
that could create some kind of panic. And this idea 2 or 3 weeks ago, they were going to do a 50 basis point cut in between meetings because there was 1 or 2 week. No, it was like you were fighting against a few kind of huge players who were calling for those 50 basis point like intermeeting cuts, and it was like they would have looked pretty silly now, I think, considering the data came out the next 2 or 3 weeks, but they held their ground. Okay, so you're between 25 and 50 on this first one. You can understand why, but you still think most likely they'll do 25 and they probably should do 25. But you also understand the idea of front loading and then sitting and waiting. Okay, and then quickly on the week ahead, what are the key things? And
So it's basically the CPI and PPI, though to be honest, at this stage, I don't see much scope for a surprise that would be big enough to change Fed policy. In the sense that, as we said, the Fed is happy with inflation where it is. It's really focused now on the employment leg of the mandate. Also, if you look at the data since Q1, we have moved to a lower range for both CPI and PC. And the consensus is 20.2% for CPI, PC probably around that number as well. It's hard to see that changing. So the news, I mean, the news flow, I don't think is likely to change the outcome of the FOMC, especially since, the way it works, as Powell has explained many times before the FOMC, in the couple of weeks before, he has one-on-one chats with every FOMC member. So very late data releases are not discussed before the meeting. Of course, they discuss them during the meeting, but as he keeps repeating, they don't pivot on just based on one data point. So, CPI, PPI are the main event, but in terms of Fed, they're likely to have a limited impact. And then we have the consumer confidence from the University of Michigan on Friday, and there is a excuse me, a loose relationship between that number and durables consumption. The consensus is almost no change in the headline print. The more interesting part will be the expectations of inflation. 1 year has been co coming down. 5 to 10 years has been flat. But again, in terms of Fed, no matter what happens, the Fed tells us inflation expectations are well anchored. So again, I'm not seeing there.
Interesting. So you're much more focused on jobs and then I guess second growth than inflation because you don't see they seem pretty confident on that. That's not the main variable they're looking at right now. The main variable, number one, is jobs, and then I guess general growth. Okay.
So they will, so our weekly jobless claim is likely to receive a lot of attention. I would argue it's perhaps even the more important data point of the week, given what we've just said on inflation. And there again, I mean, what it shows is a small decline or stability. So nothing, I'm not seeing in terms of economics, I'm not seeing something that could really change the Fed or signal that the economy is very different from what I'm thinking.
Okay, cool. Anything else that seems
No, I mean, that's about it. I mean, it's
Yeah.
a blackout, a pre-meeting blackout. So,
Yeah.
Waller is our last speaker this morning.
Okay. Well, that's a good one. What time is he speaking?
11 a.m. Eastern.
Okay, so pretty soon. Okay, great. It's wish everyone a wonderful weekend. Please check out launching a lot of new stuff over the next kind of 2 weeks. We expect all our professional clients to check out a lot of new models, some super interesting charts, especially in emerging markets. Yeah, and all the best. Thanks.